This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Samuel. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of 1 Samuel chapter 19 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
Hey, former American President Harry Truman was speaking of Washington, D.C. when he made the comment, "If you really want a friend in this city, buy a dog." You know, a royal court, as well as a capital city, are full of people jockeying for position, posturing for power. And under such conditions, meaningful relationships, meaningful friendships are difficult to develop. That's what made the bond and friendship between David and Jonathan so remarkable. Jonathan was the traditional heir to Israel's throne. He was Saul's blood. David was the spiritual heir to Israel's throne. He was God's choice. And yet somehow they overcame this potential rivalry and they remained pals. In tonight's chapters, we see the depth of a brotherly bond and a love between friends. 1 Samuel chapter 19. Now Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted greatly in David. You remember Saul had become jealous of David. David was everything that Saul wasn't. And Saul had tried several times now to kill him. But here Jonathan goes to bat for David. And it's interesting to me that Jonathan and David did have much in common. You remember both men were jealous for God's honor and God's glory. They both had a daring faith. Neither of these men, Jonathan nor David, were afraid to step out and act on their faith and do something great for God. You remember Jonathan had attacked that Philistine garrison, just he and his armor bearer. David, on the other hand, conquered a Philistine giant. And it's interesting how a common faith and a common love for God can create a brotherhood and a loyalty between two people. A loyalty stronger than blood, as we'll see in this relationship. And this is why Jonathan ratted on Saul. When he heard that Saul was trying to kill David, he ran back and told Dave. Jonathan said to David, "My father Saul seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until morning and stay in a secret place and hide. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. Then what I observe, I will tell you." Thus Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, "Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his works have been very good towards you. For he took his life in his hands and killed the Philistine, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood to kill David without a cause?" So Saul heeded the voice of Jonathan, and Saul swore, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be killed." Then Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all these things. So Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. You know, it took great courage for Jonathan to confront the king and to go to bat for his friend. I wonder how willing we are to stand up for our friends. When it might risk our reputation. When it might become an inconvenience to us. When it might upset our own well-being. Are we willing to risk our lives for our friends? In Jonathan's case, he was willing to risk even death for his friend. Reminds me of the man who was leaving his doctor's office one day. He said, "Well, you know, Doc, since we're such good friends, I won't insult you today and try to pay you for your services. But I do want you to know that I'm going to remember you in my last will and testament." The doctor paused for a minute and then he responded. He said, "Well, that's very kind of you, but can I see that prescription I gave you? I think I need to make a little change." Neither of these two men were good friends. You know, the old saying still applies. True friends are like diamonds. They are real and rare. False friends are like leaves. they're scattered everywhere. Man, if you have a loyal, committed friend, as Jonathan was to David, you are a rich person. Well, verse 8 says, "And there was war again, and David went out and fought with the Philistines and struck them with a mighty blow, and they fled from him." And I'm sure the chorus that Saul hated to hear was once again playing on the streets of Jerusalem. The girls were singing it in the streets. The DJs were spinning it on the radio. It was getting a lot of airplay. You remember that chorus? "Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands." And what did that do to Saul? Oh, it infuriated him. It made him so jealous. David won Saul's victories, but they enraged Saul's jealousies. And now this distressing spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand, and David was playing music with his hand. And we know from earlier experiences what's about to happen. David, duck! Not Donald Duck. David, duck! Get down, David! Duck, get down. You get it? Verse 10. "Then Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear." He threw it out of his hand. "But he slipped away from Saul's presence, and he drove the spear into the wall." I tell you, Saul can't be trusted. So David fled and escaped that night. I'm sure David sort of took the attitude, "Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me." You know, he promised not to let this happen again. And lo and behold, first time Saul has a bad day, boy, back to chunking spears. It's not a good thing to put a spear next to a jealous person. Not a good idea. Or a telephone. Or an email. Or the little chat thing they do. You know, not a good idea. And it's interesting, David fled and escaped that night, and for the next 20 years, David will be on the run, a fugitive from Saul. He won't return to the palace until he has been appointed king. Well, Saul also sent messengers to David's house to watch him and to kill him in the morning. Goons are sent by Saul to set up ambush outside of David's house. A Hebrew squad of hitmen are stalking David. And Michal, David's wife, remember though, she was also Saul's daughter, keep that in mind, told him saying, "If you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed." Now Michal is in the same situation as her brother Jonathan. Is she going to side with her husband, or will she side with her father? And she makes the right move. She protects an innocent man. You know, God expects his people to obey the governmental authorities. In this case, Michal should obey Saul. He's the king. Unless the king's command is in conflict with God's will. And that is obviously the case here. You know, what Peter and the apostles said to the Jewish Sanhedrin could also be applied to Michal. She could have said it to her father. Acts 5, verse 29, "We ought to obey God rather than men." There comes a time when that's necessary. We're to obey the government as long as the government doesn't require us to do things that are immoral or disobedient to God. Now here's what's interesting. This hit squad stakes out the house until morning light. They're trying to assassinate David. But guess what David's doing? He's inside the house singing praises to God. Can you imagine? How do we know? Psalm 59 is prefaced, "When Saul sent men and they watched the house in order to kill him." Psalm 59 are the words that David wrote on this very night. And it's interesting to me how that psalm begins and ends. It starts out as follows. "Deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Defend me from those who rise up against me. Deliver me from the workers of iniquity and save me from bloodthirsty men." What an appropriate beginning. But then it also ends in verse 16. "But I will sing of your power Yes, I will sing aloud of your mercy in the morning. And you remember Saul's goons are planning to kill David when? In the morning at daybreak. You wonder if he shouted out the line, "Your mercy in the morning," loud enough for the hit squad to hear him. "For you have been my defense and refuge in the day of trouble. To you, O my strength, I will sing praises, for God is my defense, my God of mercy." Now, it's one thing for us to sing that or read that psalm here in the sanctuary. It's another thing to write those words while people are outside plotting to kill you. Shows you David's courage and David's faith. Notice, he responds to persecution with praise. Perhaps you're experiencing a little persecution these days. How do you deal with persecution? By praising the Lord. So Michal let David down through a window, and he went and fled and escaped. And Michal took an image and laid it in the bed, put a cover of goat's hair for his head, and covered it with clothes. So when Saul sent messengers to take David, she said, "He is sick." Now, why the guy being sick would stop people from wanting to kill him, I'm not really sure. Maybe there's some kind of secret code among assassins, you know. You don't kill a sick guy. You give him some medicine, you doctor him up, then you kill him. Don't kill sick people. Then Saul sent the messengers back to see David, saying, and notice this, notice how much Saul hates David. He says, "Bring him up to me in the bed that I may kill him." I mean, notice the intensity of the king's hatred. Saul wants to deliver the death blow personally. He wants to strike David himself with his own hand. And when the messengers had come in, there was the image in the bed with a cover of goat's hair for his head. And then Saul said to Michal, "Why have you deceived me like this and sent my enemy away so that he has escaped?" And Michal answered Saul. He said to me, "Let me go. Why should I kill you?" She claims that David had threatened her life in order to let him escape. Of course, she was lying to her father. I don't know why she did that, unless maybe he was holding a spear. Rather than stand up to her dad, though, Michal falsely accuses David to save her own skin. So David fled and escaped and went to Samuel at Ramah and told him all that Saul had done. And he and Samuel went and stayed in Naoth. Now it was told Saul, saying, "Take note, David is at Naoth in Ramah." Then Saul sent messengers to take David. And when they saw the group of prophets prophesying and Samuel standing as leader over them, and I love this, the Spirit of God came upon the messengers of Saul, and they also prophesied. Isn't that amazing? The delegation from Saul, these men who are inspired by anger and jealousy, are suddenly overtaken by God, who is inspired, who inspires them with the power of the Holy Spirit. Isn't that amazing? Men that are full of hatred are suddenly overcome with the Spirit of God. And they begin to speak in these ecstatic, spontaneous messages from God. They're prophesying. And when Saul was told, he sent other messengers. And they prophesied likewise. The same thing happened to them. They too were overtaken by God. And then Saul sent messengers again the third time, and they prophesied also. God keeps overtaking these messengers. Every time Saul sends out a guy to Naoth to do his dirty work, he gets saved. That's frustrating for Saul. At some point, you need to ask yourself, hey, who holds more sway and more power over men? King Saul or the Holy Spirit? Then Saul also went to Ramah and came to the great well that is in Sekhu. So he asked and said, "Where are Samuel and David?" Now Saul's coming himself. He sent out three dispatches of assassins. They all got saved. So now Saul shows up. "Where are Samuel and David?" And someone said, "Indeed, they are at Naoth in Ramah." So he went there to Naoth in Ramah. And this time, God overtakes the king himself. for then the Spirit of God was upon him also. And he went out and prophesied until he came to Naoth in Ramah. And he also stripped off his clothes and prophesied before Samuel in like manner, and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Therefore, they say, is Saul also among the prophets? My, oh my, oh my, we've got a nude prophet on our hands here. A preacher streaker right here. One thing's for sure, there's no doubt in my mind, Saul gave you the bare facts. He spoke the naked truth, no doubt about it. This was a real experience Saul had with God. And he was encountered and overtaken by God. God had overwhelmed his heart of anger and jealousy and had replaced that anger and jealousy with praise for God. And here Saul is, he's prophesying before the Lord. And I'm sure his nakedness was probably an expression of his humility and his remorse. I mean, he rent his garments, he tore his clothes. But it's interesting, and this is a point a lot of people miss. Humility and remorse don't necessarily translate into faith and into character. Sad but true. I've met people who come forward and they weep and weep and shed tears and cry, and I'll never do it again, and I'm sorry, and great remorse, great weeping. But then they get up and they walk out and they do the very same things again. You see, just humility, just remorse doesn't translate into a changed life. Here's what people don't realize. You can waste an experience with God. You can waste it. He touches your heart. He creates a change. But if you don't cooperate, if you don't become an accomplice in that change, if you don't participate with the work that God wants to do in your life and the changes that He wants to make, and you get right back up and you forget it and fall right back into your old patterns, you can waste an experience with God. Sadly, this is what happens to Saul. This experience basically ends up as just a diversion so that David can escape again. Saul goes right back to his vicious ways. Well, in chapter 20, David catches up with his friend Jonathan. Then David fled from Naoth in Ramah and went and said to Jonathan, and he pours out his heart to his friend here, "What have I done? What is my iniquity and what is my sin before your father that he seeks my life?" You know, David's confused. He's uncertain here. He's asking his friend Jonathan, "Look, I've been faithful to your father. I've served Saul. Man, I've gone out and I've killed the Philistines. I've fought Saul's enemies. I've fought his battles for him. What is it that he has against me? What have I done to him?" David has been so loyal to Saul, but he fears returning to the royal court. He's afraid if he could ever go back. And so Jonathan said to him, "By no means, you shall not die. Indeed, my father will do nothing, either great or small, without first telling me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." Jonathan believes that if David does return to the royal court, he can protect his friend. He'll be privy to all of Saul's plans. So if Saul ever does try to strike David, Jonathan will know first, and he can warn David. He's wanting David to come back, you know, to his previous post. But then David took an oath and said, "Your father certainly knows that I have found favor in your eyes, and he has said, 'Do not let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved.'" David doesn't agree with Jonathan's conclusions. Here's what he figures. If Saul can kill, he can certainly lie. And he might just hide his intentions from Jonathan. "But truly, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death." So Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you yourself desire, I will do it for you." David knows Saul too well. He doesn't trust him. And David concocts a plan here to determine Saul's real intentions and therefore his own future within Saul's court. And David said to Jonathan, "Indeed, tomorrow is the new moon." It was a monthly festival that celebrated the full moon. "And I should not fail to sit with the king to eat. But let me go that I may hide in the field until the third day at evening. And if your father misses me at all, then say, David earnestly asked permission of me that he might run over to Bethlehem, his city, his hometown, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the family. If he thus says, it is well, your servant will be safe. But if he is very angry, then be sure that evil is determined by him. Therefore, you shall deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. Nevertheless, if there is iniquity in me, kill me yourself, for why should you bring me to your father? And Jonathan said, far be it from you. For if I knew certainly that evil was determined by my father to come upon you, then would I not tell you? Verse 10. Then David said to Jonathan, who will tell me? Or what if your father answers you roughly? And Jonathan said to David, come and let us go out into the field. So both of them went out into the field. And then Jonathan said to David, the Lord God of Israel is witness, and he's about to take an oath here, that when I have sounded out my father sometime tomorrow or the third day, and indeed there is good toward David, and I do not send to you and tell you, may the Lord do so and much more to Jonathan. But if it pleases my father to do you evil, then I will report it to you and send you away, and you may go in safety. And the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. Jonathan blesses David, but he wants David to also bless him. And he says, and you shall not only show me the kindness of the Lord while I still live, that I may not die, but you shall not cut off your kindness from my house forever. No, not when the Lord has cut off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. Jonathan knows that he's not to be king. He knows that God has chosen David. And he's asking David to bless him and his descendants. And so Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let the Lord require it at the hand of David's enemies. Now Jonathan again caused David to vow because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. And this is so marvelous. This is so wonderful. I mean, just you've got to think of the dynamic between these two men. Jonathan had been raised, he had been brought up with the understanding that he would sit on the throne. He was the rightful heir. He was Saul's son. But now God has changed the plan. And it is amazing to me that Jonathan is so willing to cooperate. He's such a humble person. He has such a sensitive heart. He wants God's will more than his way. I wonder if we would feel the same in his situation. And now he's befriending David. He's helping David. And in verse 18, Jonathan gives David a signal to communicate with him when he learns of Saul's intentions. Then Jonathan said to David, tomorrow is the new moon, and you will be missed because your seat will be empty. And when you have stayed 3 days, go down quickly and come to the place where you hid on the day of the deed and remain by the stone easel. Then I will shoot 3 arrows to the side as though I shot at a target. And there I will send a lad saying, go find the arrows. And if I expressly say to him, look, the arrows are on this side of you, get them and come. Then as the Lord lives, there is safety for you and no harm. But if I say thus to the young man, look, the arrows are beyond you, go your way, for the Lord has sent you away. I mean, here's the sign. Arrows shot to David's side, to the young man's side, David will be safe. Arrows shot over the young man's head, David needs to run for his life. There's dangerous intent in Saul's heart. Verse 23, and as for the matter which you and I have spoken of, indeed the Lord be between you and me forever. In other words, if you need to flee, remember me. You made a promise to me. I'm going to hold you to it.
Pastor Sandy has been teaching through the book of 1 Samuel, an Old Testament book that's full of accounts of men and women who displayed incredible faith and trust in God. Samuel's own mother had a sincere loyalty to her God, trusting that he would come through for her in providing a child. What a great man of God Samuel became. He was a mentor and counselor to Saul and to David. Perhaps you're at a place in life where you have the opportunity to be a mentor or help counsel others. This is a privilege, and you may not realize what an encouragement or voice of wisdom you might be able to offer another family, couple, or individual. Don't discount the ways that God can use you for His kingdom. If you'd like to listen to more messages like this one, go to sandyadams.org. There's a whole archive of messages from Pastor Sandy. You can also download our mobile app too, so you have these messages with you on the go. If you want to get in touch with us over the phone, you can do that as well. Give us a call at 770-736-2828. That's 770-736-2828. Our time with you today is about up, but we hope you'll join Pastor Sandy again as he continues teaching in the book of 1 Samuel. Come back, ready to learn more, right here on Sandy Adams Radio.